think that this would lend itself to being able to innovate quickly and to be able to basically introduce new technologies. That's also not the case. On the left-hand side, you see the results of a survey around what are the highest priorities for a lot of these media technology companies. And you will see things like 4K UHD production delivery or VR production delivery. You know, these are the things that they want to be focusing on. But what you're seeing is the adoption or their ability to actually make good on these prioritizations. You see just kind of the column over. There are not that many folks that have adopted AI. There are not that many folks that are able to leverage VR. And you know, I would contend that it's because of the complexity of the supply chain. Now, if you weren't getting kind of concerned enough about the complexity, the last thing that I'll kind of mention before we talk about how budgets aren't keeping up is the cloud aspect of this. Usually, the unit economics of cloud, the fact that you can leverage cloud in an on-demand model, makes it something that's very, very attractive, especially for certain operations around things like encoding or hard-to-predict consumption. But there are also quite a few inherent complexities associated with getting to cloud. Most often than not, most cloud deployments are private, and they're on-prem, or they're off-premise. And so you start to have this very slow migration from private to hybrid to public. And all of a sudden, the systems that power your production and distribution processes are spread out across that many more environments. So this is another very major factor that is playing a role in how efficiently one can run their content supply chain. So while all of this is happening, you might be wondering, well, if the budgets are keeping up, we're probably in an okay state. But of course, the point of this whole story is that this is yet another component that is making it even harder to produce quality content and to make sure that you're creating content that connects with audiences. And so it is the case that media and technology budgets are simply not keeping pace. You can see on the left-hand side, again, this is a survey, 40% of those that were surveyed, their technology budgets were either going to stay the same or actually decrease. And proving further the idea that the media budgets or the content creation budgets are not keeping pace, consider that the total number of pilots that are being that have been produced by the major broadcast networks, that's also a number that has been on decline over the course of the last 10 years. So you have a very increasingly complex environment, and the budgets aren't necessarily there to be able to allow media technology companies or media companies to keep pace. So that's a little bit of the landscape. So with that context in mind, let's step a little bit ahead and let's talk about what you get with a connected supply chain. And then we'll work our way back to how you would get there from whatever your current state might be. If you have a connected supply chain, these are the five major values that you'll typically be able to realize. First and foremost, a connected supply chain will give you streamlined operations. And the reason for that is you will actually have end-to-end visibility around how your content is produced and how your content is distributed. That visibility comes from having analytics or data along every stage of the content supply chain. For instance, this might be analytics around how long certain review and approve cycles take. It might be analytics around what sort of resource utilization you're seeing. This information gives you very powerful insights that you can then use to actually save costs because you can identify bottlenecks. Maybe review and approve processes with a certain legal team take longer than with other legal teams. Or to my point about resource consumption, you might find that you're over-provisioned for certain cloud compute capabilities. So powerful insights give you a venue for being able to minimize costs. They also give you a venue for being able to maximize revenue, because when you understand costs, and then at the other end of the spectrum, you understand consumption across different content monetization windows, you can get an idea of content ROI. You can start to understand which content is performing and how much did you spend to get to that higher performing content. But the last piece that's probably the most important piece is around seamless integration. Keeping up with the pace of technology innovation, that's something that's critical to being able to scale and being able to automate. A connected supply chain makes it very easy to introduce a new technology like artificial intelligence or a new format like virtual reality and actually have that technology lift all stages of the content supply chain. Because otherwise, what you're having to do is you're having to integrate that technology over and over again with every single system that touches your content. So this is what you get with a connected supply chain. Let's talk about how you can get there. So for most folks, this is pretty much what their content supply chain looks like. And if you've never sat down to trace the life of content through your company or through someone that you work with, it's a little bit like when you're asked by a coach to document how you spend your day, and you find out that you spend way more time on Facebook and way more time in meetings than you expected. It's a little bit like that, but this is ultimately much more horrifying. And don't be kind of confused by this. It might look like this is a form of connection. The reality is that some of these lines that go from, let's say, analytics and reporting to the management team, some of these tasks are actually very manual. So they really only exist in the heads of the persons that are carrying out that task. And that's actually kind of horrifying, because if that person were to leave or to move on or get very sick, all of a sudden your entire content supply chain is stuck on a person or a set of persons. So it's not necessarily a model that scales. So today, most content supply chains, they have an unparalleled level of complexity. And it really doesn't allow you to move all that quickly. But let's simplify this a little bit. Most content supply chains, in their simplest form, look a little bit like what you're seeing here, which is basically a content lifecycle that occurs across 9 stages. And on the left-hand side, you have pre-production commissioning, and it spans all the way through archive storage and transcoding, through to monetization, to data insights and reporting. So this is a super simplified version of your supply chain. Now, it doesn't matter how simple the visualization here is, what we have found is that more often than not, the supply chain is silent. That the systems that power archival are completely disconnected from the systems that power nonlinear editing, which are completely separated from the platforms that power digital video playout. For all intents and purposes, each one of those systems lives on an island. So how do you get there? How can you get to a connected supply chain? How many of you guys here are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs? All right, pretty good. So we're going to go through Uyala's hierarchy of needs as it relates to content supply chain. I don't think there's a trademark infringement there, so we'll see what happens. So usually when you're setting out to connect your content supply chain, you start with your basic needs. And the most important initial step is taking an inventory of all the systems that touch your assets and your asset metadata. And by touch, I mean potentially store it, potentially transform it, or are potentially responsible for some form of distribution and syndication. Once you've done that, you can start to put in place the first two critical aspects of getting on the path to a connected supply chain. The first is shared metadata and assets. Usually this will take the form of some form of a media asset management system. And it doesn't need to be a full-blown map. It can be a headless map. It can be deployed in such a way that individual business units continue to leverage the UIs that they're most used to, and on the back end, there's a system that's connecting them. The second element of this is workflow, or shared orchestration, creating connective tissue across the individual system such that on the back end, if someone working in this BU is looking for a particular piece of content, it's really easy for them to be able to actually pull content from another BU. And you know, this is where you start to see some of the value in this first stage of the hierarchy, because when you have visibility, and it's very minimal visibility at this point, but when you've cleared the brush away, you start to cut down on duplication of tasks, and most importantly, duplication of content creation, because all of a sudden, you start to have a single notion of your content catalog. So, these are the basic needs as it relates to Uyala's hierarchy of needs. And it basically has to do with a central asset and metadata repository. The next phase is really around the psychological needs. And once you've cleared the brush away, it's around how do you make it easier to traverse that path, or how do you make it easier to traverse that content supply chain. And so we're going to be talking here about how you make usage and expansion easier. The next stage, then, is around shared user experience. And user experience is an aspect of the content supply chain that really doesn't give it, again, as much credit as it deserves. Shared UX has the ability to make it easier to go from one system to the next, potentially because you've made it easier to authenticate. You know, you have single sign-on, something of that sort. Or potentially, if you were both a content curator and a content editor, it could also mean the collapsing of UIs, such that you can do more of your day-to-day job in a single UI, or in a UI that has consistency from a metadata schema perspective or from an operations perspective. The other aspect of this is the plugin framework. And you might recall a couple slides ago where we were talking about how even though there are several priorities that have been stated around getting closer into AI or starting to pursue 4K or UHD, the reality is that not many media companies actually have the ability to action those priorities. And so you end up in this situation where you've stated your priorities, but you have no ability to actually make any progress against them. So the benefit of a plugin framework is that it becomes easy to introduce, you know, those new components and to introduce those new technologies. And to do it in such a way that you only have to introduce it once. So you can introduce artificial intelligence as a way to be able to automate the localization of content. And if you're connected, if your supply chain is truly connected, you only need to introduce that technology once, because the metadata that gets generated from having the AI work with your MAM, that's metadata that can then be used by your content recommendation algorithm. That's metadata that potentially can be used by content editors to help guide a more automated editing or highlight creation process. So that's the benefit of a plugin framework. It actually allows you to be able to introduce new technologies faster, and more often than not, introduce them in line with when those technologies are actually initially being made available. So the last step on the pathway to, you know, creating that content supply chain has to do with shared analytics. And we talked a little bit about insights a handful of slides ago and how it allowed you to have this idea of content ROI. Once you get to the top of the pyramid, this is oftentimes where your focus should be. How can you make sure that all the metadata that's being created at every stage of your content supply chain is going to a single data lake? And this would be metadata like how much content is a particular content partner providing? How many turns of the crank do you take from a review and approve cycle for content produced by this encoding fleet? That is very rich data that helps you understand how efficiently you're producing and distributing content. But it's also data that helps you have an unparalleled understanding of the true cost of producing your content. Because it's not just how much you're paying to the party that from whom you're licensing content. It's not just how much you pay for the rights to that content. It's also how much you're spending from a personnel and from a resource perspective to be able to interact with that content. And when you pair that data with how that content is being monetized across each monetization window, you have a notion of cost, and you have a notion of revenue, and you start to actually be able to make very informed decisions around what's the right type of content for me to be producing, what's the best and most efficient type of content for me to actually have in my system. And so once you've crested the pyramid, you've not just connected the content supply chain, you've actually closed the loop associated with the content supply chain. And so when we talk about connecting the content supply chain, it's really about creating this closed feedback loop where the content commissioning process, that's not necessarily the start of the content lifecycle. Ideally, the content commissioning process is informed by how you've previously produced content that looks like the content you're thinking about creating now. And that ideally your licensing or acquisition strategies are informed by where you've seen most success relative to cost you've previously incurred. And it's worth noting that not necessarily every player in the space thinks this way, but when you look at someone like a Netflix, when you think of someone like an Amazon, this is actually how they think about their content creation process. They think about it as a single content supply chain, and that's actually what makes them a very scary entity. It's not the fact that they have a kick-ass UX experience. It's the fact that they know at every stage of the life cycle where their content is and potentially what the impact is that it's going to have in terms of reaching and retaining their audience. So this is how the major OTT properties operate. Okay, so that's the content supply chain and the values of the content supply chain. Let's talk a little bit about Ooyala. I know we're a little bit past the close time, but I promise we will be brief. So Ooyala is a company that focuses on providing a platform to help our customers streamline and make sense of their content supply chain. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of Telstra, who's a large Australian telecommunications company. We work with customers like Discovery and AccuWeather and ITV and Turner to help them power either their overall content supply chains or to help them power specific workflows within their content supply chains. So for instance, if they only care about creating an OTT property, we're able to help them get up and running very quickly. But if they want something more sophisticated and they want us to help them streamline content production, if they want us to help them scale the number of, to the number of distribution partnerships that they have, we also have the ability to move further up the content supply chain and help them with that. And as you'll see in the next two slides, and I promise there aren't too many further slides, we're able to do this with the help of partners like Microsoft and Telstra, of course. Now, if you want a visualization of what the potential partners and systems are that oftentimes make up a content supply chain, this is a little bit what that world can look like. And this is overlaid, of course, with our product set at the core. Ooyala Flex Media Platform is our core product that caters to being able to operate from pre-production and commissioning of content all the way out to the collection of analytics. And it can be deployed in headless fashion, so you don't necessarily need to know that we're there. We can be on the back end connecting everything. And then, if you have more elaborate needs, let's say you want a MAM, we can either provide that or you can get that from one of our partners. And partners are extraordinarily important. Content supply chains, as we talked about, they're often made up of best-of-breed systems. And so it's extremely critical that when you're thinking about connecting your content supply chain, and moreover, when you're thinking about selecting the platform, that you have a platform that works great with the investments you've already made. So we talked a little bit about the benefits that you can achieve with a content supply chain. Let's put some numbers behind those. So for a broadcaster distributor in Asia Pacific, leveraging our platform, these are the types of efficiencies that they've been able to gain. So from a reduction in time spent on a per project basis, they're seeing approximately 58% reduction on the time spent per project. And what this means is, when they're able to achieve that time reduction, their existing personnel is actually able to do that much more, approximately 3 to 4 additional projects. This equates to very real savings on a per project basis. Nearly $750,000 are saved on a per project basis. And what this means is, with your same personnel, largely within your same budget, you can do way more. And so, if you want a very quantifiable example of the value of a connected supply chain, it's doing more with largely the existing budget that you have. So that's all that I've got. Thank you guys very much for coming by. I don't know if the format allows. I don't know if we have time for questions in the program, but happy to answer. Yeah, okay.
Andy Rosen, I work for DSR, and TVO and Dalet are behind or surrounding the new SIMDI project to unify media microservices. The difference between what you do and what they're going to be doing in that group isn't clear to me. Why aren't you joining that group?
Very good question. So we are actually in the process of joining that group. I'd say the way that, that we do differentiate from those folks is we do come much more from the digital world. So we did start off much more with a view around digital distribution. And you know, we think that that does give us a very different vantage point, because it's not unlike how a Netflix or an Amazon startup. But to your question, yes, we are planning on joining that group.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Any other questions?
It feels like that this is a great, from the ground up, you're building a system, and I know you mentioned all of it, but what's your advice for people with pretty entrenched systems already?
That's actually where, that tends to be more the profile of the customer that we work with, where they've made, let's say, heavy investments into Avid and Grass Valley and EVS, We've spent a lot of time in developing interfaces so that you can actually get more runway from your existing investments. So it doesn't matter if you're starting out or if you're already very far down the path. The benefit of a content supply chain platform is it should already work with the investments you've made.
You talked about 58% reduction in time on the last page. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Where does that come from?
So there are a number of ways. For this particular broadcaster, the major item was around resource utilization. So they had over-provisioned the number of resources that they need, and I'm talking about both personnel as well as hardware, that they needed to be able to encode content. They also found bottlenecks in terms of their content ingestion and content distribution processes. They were finding that there was a lot of back and forth with their sourcing partners in terms of getting content in the right format and then also getting the content metadata in the right format. And it's little things like this that when you identify them that actually have a lot of scale. A system like ours actually has the ability to meet the partner where they are. So they can send whatever content they have or whatever format they have and we'll seamlessly manage the translation to whatever format is necessary for whatever system you're working with. So it's items like that where it's a lot of back and forth, it's a lot of people-driven tasks that all of a sudden you can automate. Any other questions? No, perfect. Well, if you are interested in getting a demo of FlexMedia Platform, don't hesitate to come by our demo booth in the demo room. But otherwise, thank you guys so much for spending 30 minutes, and we'll see you guys later.